Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
According to the latest figures, childhood vaccine rates in Ireland remain below pre-pandemic levels, with uptake falling short of the 95% coverage required to achieve herd immunity against key early childhood diseases. So what are the main vaccines that make up the childhood vaccination schedule? Why are they important and why the fall off? Well, for more on this, we're joined by GP Moira Finn. Good morning, Moira. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Colm. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. A reminder, before we start, you can send in any questions for more on 0870 32 32 32 or drop us a text on 51551. I suppose maybe begin with the basics, Moira. You might explain the importance of vaccines and why we do it at all.
Yeah, good question. So vaccines work by producing an immune response to help you fight a particular disease. And these would be diseases that are well known and would have previously caused large numbers of death and disability among children. They're biological preparations and they're made from either weakened or dead bacteria or viruses. Usually that's the case. So it means that a vaccine cannot cause the disease, but it causes a template to be made in the body so you can fight that disease. But a vaccine itself cannot cause the disease. They work in two ways, really. One is the individual, they produce an immune response in the individual, in the baby or child. But very importantly, when there is widespread vaccination and worldwide vaccination, you would hope that the disease itself will not spread anymore because there isn't enough of the disease around for it to continue to replicate. So that's why uptake rates are really important, and we hear about the kind of the 95% and herd immunity. That really matters, and when we go beyond that, lower than that, it means that these illnesses and viruses continue to spread throughout the population, and unfortunately they aren't going to be eradicated if that's the case.
Right, and it begins very young, between 2 months and 13 months of age, when people, apart from when they reach their very much older years, people are at their most vulnerable.
Absolutely. Your baby is born with no inherent protection. Some antibodies pass through from the mother to the baby, but very, very few. And particularly against these particular illnesses, there's about 13, 14 of them that are covered. And I recognise that it's really hard. You've got this perfect newborn baby and you are being encouraged to bring them in at 2 months of age. They're very, very small still, to have vaccinations done. And the schedule is quite kind of, it's bang, bang, bang. You know, you have about 5 visits between 2 months and 13 months. But the idea is that you give it to the children so when they are at their most vulnerable, when they're most likely to get these diseases and have horrible complications from these diseases as well. And, you know, the schedule is very safe. It's constantly being monitored and it's constantly been updated too, with kind of new possibilities. And chickenpox has only just recently been put onto the schedule. Prior to that, people were opting to come in for a chickenpox vaccination and they were paying for it. But now it's on the free national immunization plan. So, you know, that they're always updating and improving the schedule. But I do recognize it's a difficult thing. You've just come home with your newborn and there's people ringing you, organising appointments for checkups and
the heel prick test is bad enough without further jabs might explain people's reluctance there. But the diseases themselves, I mean, a lot of them haven't been seen in recent memory. People maybe in their 40s and older would have, you know, got measles, mumps and the like, and, you know, be living fine and perfectly healthy today. But in some cases, they can have serious effects.
Oh, this is it. And that's it's the success of the vaccination program has partly been some of the challenging communicating this to people and to parents. We no longer see measles and which can cause in some people a relatively mild illness. Very few. Most people get quite sick with measles, but it can cause blindness. It can cause severe issues around encephalitis and brain damage as a result, and death. So even though I remember I got measles, I was really sick with it, and thankfully didn't have any of these complications, but people did and frequently do. And measles, unfortunately, is on a rise across the European continent, and you'll often have you'll hear about kind of warnings about people travelling with young children to make sure they're vaccinated in advance. So, you know, they are, these illnesses are still there. They're not dead. There's only a very few of them are, have been eradicated by vaccination. But the one thing we can do to protect your children against them is to vaccinate against them. And they still cause serious illness. And the other thing that I think is really important when you think about it is that there's a huge, you know, we're in a very lucky situation in our country that we can afford a vaccination program. There's about 1.5 million children every year die from vaccine preventable diseases because they live in countries that don't have the facilities that we have. And, you know, so when we're trying to vaccinate our population, what you're trying to do as well is protect the others who are too ill, too young or too poor to actually be able to access vaccination.
OK, some people who are hesitant about vaccines are concerned about side effects. And, you know, this is probably something you've been asked about as a GP yourself. So what is the situation there as against getting the disease itself?
Well, of course, I've been asked frequently, and I think what's most important is that, you know, there's an open conversation about this and that we discuss that side effects to the vaccine are common. Side effects are a very small little bit of fussiness in the baby, a little bit of tenderness around the site where the injection is given, maybe a slight temperature. And that does happen. But anything beyond that is incredibly rare. But you have to acknowledge that people are concerned. They've got this perfectly healthy baby and we're bringing them in and maybe giving them a temperature. You know, I get that. But you have to balance fear against the absolute dangers of being exposed to the illnesses themselves. But the very common side effects are like that, slight temperature. And we often recommend that you give the baby paracetamol before they come in, especially before the MenB vaccine. About 10% will get quite fussy, you know, tired and a bit kind of miserable for, you know, a few hours after the injection is given. It's something like one in 20,000 will develop a high fever that's maybe significant. And it's incredibly rare, like less than one in a million will have an severe adverse effect.
OK, I mean, look, some of the fears are stoked by bad actors. There was that discredited report by Andrew Wakefield that led to a fall off in people getting measles vaccination. There's a lot of disinformation on social media. How much of those kind of issues are brought to your attention by a GP or inform the reluctance in your experience?
I would have this conversation frequently, and my colleagues in the surgery would, and the nurses in particular, because, you know, what will happen is the baby will be brought in for maybe a 2-week check, and then they'll be brought in for a 6-week check, which is just a developmental check. And it's usually a very lovely visit and you're just checking how they're getting on. And during that visit, they're usually encouraged to make an appointment for the vaccinations 2 weeks later. So it's around that time and maybe with the nurses themselves, and people have questions, and of course they should have questions. But, you know, the social media campaigns, which are often aggressive, they're so ill-informed and they're dangerous and cowardly, in my opinion, because, you know, they can make any claim. We have to give facts, scientific and medical facts, and that's what we're limited to. But I think it's really important to acknowledge that people worry. And you know, often decisions are made based on fear rather than based on reality. And again, you know, it's our place to actually give as much proper, well-founded scientific information as we possibly can and encourage people to ask questions. And when they do, they frequently come to the conclusion that they're happy to go ahead. And it would be really, really wrong of any medical professional to dismiss somebody because they have vaccine hesitancy. It's, you know, it's our job to educate and to inform.
Right. I suppose people who are interested in health information online, people who may, you know, consume a lot of wellness information or information about complementary therapies or alternative medicines online, it was found during, I think, the COVID pandemic that they in particular found themselves being targeted with vaccine skeptical information. Would that match your experience as well?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I don't know. I presume you get into an algorithm, you know, that you're fed that information that, you know, the algorithm believes that maybe this is something that you'd be interested in. And that's really unfortunate because then, you know, all the information you've been exposed to is possibly skeptical or questioning the medical, what I would say is fact-based information. Right. And I get that. And I think we're all exposed to stuff like that at times. And decision-making is based on fear rather than fact sometimes. And our brains try to seek patterns and we make random connections between things that we see. And we can confuse correlation and causation. Right. But, you know, basically, it's about you balance personal autonomy with moral responsibility and looking after your own child in this situation.
Listener query here. Is it true that as people age, their resistance to vaccines wane?
It can do. And often what we'll often say, there's a pneumococcal vaccine that is given for people who have kind of recurring respiratory issues or COPD. And it may be given to them when they're young. But once they get over 65, we give it again, for instance. So your immune response may not be as active or as aggressive as you'd like it to be. When they're younger, like that's why with babies, they have no immunity, really. So we're giving them a kind of an immunity to kind of cover them. But those infections, that immunity will wane over a period of time, but they're not exposed to those same illnesses when they get older as well.
Okay.
So it's a mixture of both. But, you know, for older people, we always recommend the flu vaccines every year. It's a different thing. That's the same for children. We often recommend a nasal flu vaccine between 2 and 17 because the flu vaccine is a vaccine that's made every year, and it's a new vaccine every year, so that's why it's always a seasonal thing. But yes, as you get older, you may be more vulnerable.
Okay, I suppose your colleagues in emergency rooms around the country would probably be grateful to you issuing advice on that particular type of vaccine for respiratory and flu vaccines. RSV vaccine is being administered to babies. Why is that being rolled out now?
That's quite a game changer, I have to say. So the RSV vaccine was introduced a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, to all babies born during the RSV season. So RSV season really is the same as the flu season. So it's considered to be between October and March, but it's the only one that's offered before they leave the hospital. So it's offered before you leave to the baby as a newborn, and it's a passive immunization in some ways, so that they actually don't, it's not quite the same as other vaccines. So they actually have protection for about 6 months with that. They may roll this out so that babies all year round will be given it, but it's for now it's seen as more of a seasonal thing.
And RSV, the symptoms are what, a severe cough, is it?
Oh yeah, it's cough, wheeziness, babies can't feed very well, they can get very, very ill, and it's actually in the first month that they're most vulnerable, so that's why it's so important to give it before they leave the hospital.
Another question for you, is it possible to get the BCG vaccine for my children? We live on a dairy farm in a TB black spot and the children are in close contact with cows and calves. Thanks. Is there a correlation between bovine TB and why somebody would need BCG?
Well, BCG used to be given as standard vaccination, and you might remember it was the one that was given in the arm that gave the little blip in the arm. It's not part of the standard vaccination program anymore. It's given by public health rather than GP services. So that person can actually ask their public health doctor about that, and they might be able to access it.
And finally, the HPV vaccine. And the uptake there, it's offered to girls in the first year of secondary. It's offered to boys now as well. That's one that I suppose may not be directly relevant at that time of life, but will be much later on.
Absolutely. And again, like this is an extraordinary thing. This is the only vaccine we have against cancer. Like when you think about it, if you had a vaccine against bowel cancer or lung cancer, we'd all be opting for it. So this is given to children before they become sexually mature, because HPV is passed through sexual contact mostly. It can cause cervical cancer and vulval cancers and all sorts of other things for women and for men. They get penile cancer, oral cancers from it as well.
Okay,
it's a really important thing, and there's been really good uptake on that, thank God.
Okay. All right, GP Maura Finn, thanks for joining us on that. Back in a minute.
51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.